You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. Earlier this week, the New York Times published an analysis of national data that found that Blacks and Latinx Americans are three times as likely to catch COVID-19 compared to whites. To discuss the implications of those findings and what it means for the battle against the virus here in the Central Valley, I spoke with Whitney Pertl, Assistant Professor of Sociology at UC Merced, Dr. Tanya Pacheco-Warner with the Central Valley Health Policy Institute, and Chet Hewitt, President and CEO of the Sierra Health Foundation and the Center at Sierra Health, which is focused on ending health inequities in the San Joaquin Valley. So, Dr. Pacheco-Warner, I'd like to start with you. What are some of the factors that account for the data that we're seeing that Black and Latinx Americans are disproportionately more likely to catch COVID-19?
One of the things we have to remember is how much of our Latino Hispanic population is out on the front lines right now in high contact jobs. So food, retail, hospitality, healthcare related support. So really what we see is that the Latino population is out there in the community not being able to stay at home as much as possible, which makes social distancing very difficult. It's also important to think about how, when it comes to the vulnerable Latino population, that food insecurity, housing and rent insecurity that existed much before the pandemic makes it really difficult for people to make that choice to stay home and forgo a paycheck, even when it comes to the idea that maybe you should quarantine because you've been in contact with someone without the added support for them to be able to continue to support their family. That's a difficult decision to make.
Chet Hewitt, I'm wondering if you could speak to the same question as well, and maybe specific to the community that you serve and the conditions in the South Valley.
Well, I think my colleague is spot on. He talks about the kind of social and economic conditions which, you know, make it difficult for people to isolate and protect themselves and their families. Issues from, you know, being essential workers, dense working environments. You know, when you think about food packaging and food production, those are types of kind of economic activities that don't allow for social distancing. And then I would have to add into that housing, you know, more dense housing. Housing is very expensive in California, so it's hard to think about, you know, how do you practice good public health measures when the social conditions in which you're living out both your personal and economic life, you know, don't allow you to do the kind of social distancing and have the kind of health practices and the kind of spacing that's needed in order to be as protective as possible for your families and your community.
Whitney Pertl, given what we know from health equity research, is this at all surprising?
No, it's actually not surprising for all of the reasons we just heard. This is a health crisis like many other, and all it does is exacerbate existing inequalities. And so in thinking about the last question about why we see Black and Latinx American disproportionately harmed, I would like to name specifically structural racism as a reinforcing inequitable system that shapes the precarious work that we've talked about, the residential segregation and exposure to environmental harms and close living conditions. Even homelessness, incarceration is another aspect, and we see that prisons are hotspots and who is more likely to be stopped and then arrested and charged. And even medical bias, so racism within our medical institutions and interpersonal racism. And research has shown that Black Americans, for instance, have been turned away more likely for showing symptoms of COVID-19 than others. And so I think it's those social economic conditions and racist conditions that we have in the United States and in the Valley that has definitely shaped the unequal harms that people of color have faced.
Dr. Pacheco-Warner, can you speak to mortality rates? What do we know at this point about the relationship between mortality rates for Black and Latinx Americans related to COVID-19?
You know, in big cities around the country where there is a significant Black population, we are seeing a disproportionate burden of the deaths on the Black community. And so this is, again, as my colleague mentioned, so many of these things contribute to the disproportionate Black death rates in locally, though. From the data that we do have available, such as with Fresno County, we are seeing the disproportionate amount of deaths among the Latinx population. And again, and even across age groups too. So it's not even just our most elderly frail that are dying. And so that is for me a cause of alarm that we have disproportionate harm being done by this pandemic on the Latinx community. One thing I will say, though, locally for our Black American community is that we do not know yet if the Black community locally feels comfortable enough or is getting enough access to testing to really know if those numbers that they have are really reflecting what we're seeing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like when this conversation first started, when we were first seeing data that indicated that there may be a bigger issue in the Black and Latinx community, much of the conversation was related to the fact that those are populations that are more likely to have underlying conditions like diabetes or hypertension, which we know statistically is the case. But what I find interesting about this conversation is that it's so much more complicated than that. Whitney, I'm wondering if you could maybe elaborate a little bit more about the complexity of addressing these kind of disproportionate outcomes when it comes to health in America for people who are not white.
Yeah, I think we have seen a lot of that conversation. You know, if you have a pre-existing condition such as diabetes, maybe asthma, that you are more likely to catch and then die from COVID-19. And the research suggests that people of color, especially Black Americans, Indigenous populations, are more likely to have those pre-existing conditions. But I would say as a sociologist, we have to look at what puts people at risk for any of these outcomes. So if asthma puts people at risk for COVID-19, what puts those same people at risk for asthma? And we can trace that back to environmental racism, lack of clean water in particular areas. We see that in the Valley. We see that in Flint. We see that in all these places that are hard hit. Who can, you know, who has access to green spaces for social distancing but still wants to do exercise? And so I think if you just move, if you're trying to sort of trace the causes, the social causes of COVID-19, you can't stop at these other pre-existing conditions that already are impacting and killing Black and Brown Americans. You have to find those root causes, the socioeconomic disadvantage and inequality we're seeing, structural racism, and address those things, those social conditions that put people at risk for additional risk.
So I'd like to shift the conversation and talk a bit about data itself and what is being reported and what is not being reported. So Chet, I'm going to throw this question to you. As we develop better strategies to prevent the spread of the coronavirus, why is it so important to have data that is disaggregated by race and ethnicity?
Well, the data is important because we need to know where to target our resources. And given the unusual circumstances under which this pandemic is playing itself out, in terms of there being limited levels of resources, from testing kits to PPE and other devices that we typically use, knowing where and how to deploy those interventions is incredibly, incredibly important. We know that for African Americans here in California, who are 6% of the population, they are actually underrepresented in a number of diagnosed cases at about 4.4%. We think that has a lot to do with the racism issues as it relates to who gets diagnosed, who gets access to care, who gets access to testing. And I think itself in mortality rate, because in that particular category, African Americans are about 9% of the total COVID-19 related deaths in the state of California. That is over two times their representation in diagnosed cases. And so that is a demonstration of a lack of access to care, the diagnosis and treatment ultimately that has the potential to save lives. And so having good data about where to target those limited resources is incredibly important. And the same is true for the Latino community, Latinx community as well. when you think about being 39% of California's population, about 52% diagnosed cases, and about 44% of those who actually die from COVID-19 as well. We need this data so that we can target the resources we do have to be most effective in preventing community transmission, treating those who are infected, and most importantly, trying to stave off death rates that are disproportionate to the representation within the total population. And for us as a health foundation, that's what equity looks like. And so we have to address all the things, both on the social, economic, and on the healthcare delivery side, in order to help keep populations safe.
Dr. Pacheco Warner, I'd like you to follow up on this. You know, where do you see holes in the data that's being reported by Central Valley counties?
One of the big challenges is that we have a big gap. A big proportion of our data is unknown when it comes to race and ethnicity, and so it's not being collected in a number of places where testing is being done, and that presents a challenge for us in terms of trying to figure out where the resources need to go. So, for example, we're working to secure CARES Act funding to go to quarantine support, but we would like to know, really, with those limited resources, where do they need to go? One of the other things that is a big gap right now is really understanding which ones of our Asian communities are being most impacted. We know, we've heard stories in terms of, for example, the Punjabi community falling through the holes, but we don't know really in terms of when we see an Asian category, what that really means for our Valley communities in terms of where the need is right now.
Certainly, because you have, a big portion of Southeast Asian population, of the Hmong population, that are working in the fields, working in conditions where they might be more vulnerable or susceptible. And it seems like the data as it's being reported is not giving us a clear picture of the perhaps disproportionate impact on those vulnerable populations. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yes. And also, I would also say that coupled with the lack of data in terms of industry and where the cases are popping up, in terms of what kinds of jobs people are being exposed to. Like, we know from lots of anecdotal data, lots of intelligence on the ground, that people are giving us that, packing houses and things of that nature are high risk, but we can't see it in the data as it stands right now, because it's just not being collected in a uniform way. And that's not just necessarily on a local jurisdiction's responsibility, but really, what are the mandates in terms of the data that needs to be collected? And do people have enough resources on the local level to collect that data?
Whitney Pirtle, you're a sociologist, you study health inequities. I'm wondering if you think there is anything we as a society will learn from this pandemic that may lead to better outcomes for minority communities moving forward, or do you think this is just maybe a repeat of the same patterns of behavior that have made these populations vulnerable in the first place?
Yeah, that's a great question. I do see it as a repeat of previous patterns of inequities that stem from living in an unequal society. And so as a sociologist who studies, societies and structures, we always point to those larger things to make the changes that we want to see. So figuring out why things are unequal and trying to gain more equity. But I do hope that it is a learning moment for all of us, especially those in power. But just to think about the fact that this crisis is exacerbating things that we have already seen, how can we address those problems that we know about? How can we address bias in medical institutions? How can we address food insecurity? How can we make living conditions stronger for those on the front lines? How can we make sure that people have PPE in all aspects? I think if I had to name one, the biggest takeaway I would want people to understand about this moment is how health equity crosses every single social problem that we have. So it's related to food and water and clean air and even climate change and education, right? We're seeing conversations about even mental health impacted from being removed to school. And so as we're moved forward in thinking about how to make societies better, I think health equity has to be a central part of that conversation.
Chet Hewitt, how can we better protect these populations? I mean, we're in this moment. I think there's a collective sort of scramble to address all of these many issues that have been raised in the course of this conversation. But knowing what we know now, what would you like to see communities and counties and states do to reduce this inequity?
Well, quickly, I want to go back to your last question and just say that I think the most important thing will be what we do about the conditions that are actually presenting themselves. You know, those of us who have worked on the social determinants of health have known for a long time that, you know, people's health status and their vulnerability can be deadly. And whether that's around asthma or diabetes rates or other issues, chronic diseases, we've known that for a long time. We know that poverty, particularly when it is promoted by or protected or traps people because of issues related to racism, that it is a deadly combination. And in this country, it's something that we need to fix. So issues around access to health care and access to affordable, quality housing, the ability to not be trapped in poor working conditions, the distribution of opportunity for folks are really important to the ongoing health status, particularly of those who are lower on the socioeconomic status scale. And so in the future, we need to realize that inequality and inequity and a lack of social justice is a health issue, and that is not only about the chronic diseases or morbidity that it promotes, there is mortality associated with it because poverty actually kills, shortens lives, and I think has a detrimental effect on the overall social and economic health of families, individuals, communities, and ultimately, you know, this state of California and this nation.
Well, I will throw the last question at Dr. Pacheco Warner. I'm just wondering what else you would like to contribute to this conversation in terms of what we do moving forward and what opportunity there is to address these inequities.
I think we are in such a pivotal moment right now in our country to be the most imaginative, the most bold in what we propose to do, because for us in our generation, this is unprecedented. And in our generation, we are seeing levels of unemployment that we haven't seen in a really long time. So I think about, for example, young people who are thinking about whether or not to continue their education and because of the moving to an online platform. And I think for me, this is the time for thinkers to emerge. This is a time for big proposals to emerge. And I can tell you, just from what I'm seeing locally, we are leveraging, about $15 million to go to things that we have been asking for a long time, like comprehensive childcare in our communities so that our essential workers can go to work and be rest assured that their kids are going to be taken care of safely and be protected from the virus. We are going to be integrating community health workers, which we've known for a long time are such a key partner to health in linguistically isolated and culturally isolated communities, to be hired as contact tracers, to be hired as people who are doing the outreach and support for people, helping them understand how to quarantine. And so really, I feel like this is a time to shift our thinking and really put forth and implement the things that we always have known work, and see them be instilled not just now in the emergency, but how institutions can continue to support them after the emergency ends. And this goes for so many of my colleagues that have moved leaps and bounds in terms of housing and rental protections that they've been fighting for years. Some of those things are now on the bridge of being made a reality. And I think that is where we need to focus our efforts, is really thinking system shifts, and really just putting those proposals forward, because no one really had a strategy about how they were going to address this pandemic. So thinkers and doers coming together now, putting together those proposals, bringing them forward, now is the time to actually implement some of these things.
Well, I thank you all for your expertise and your leadership on this issue, and thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.